For more information on Ancient Dragon Zen Gate, please visit our website at www.ancientdragon.org. Our teachings are offered to the community through the generosity of our supporters. To make a donation online, please visit our website.
So, good evening, everyone. To begin, why don't we share names? I'm Sidde Shor Sid for short.
I'm Chris.
I'm Rick.
Colleen.
Yeah.
Jane.
Buckhamson.
Wade.
Jan.
Dave.
Matt.
Dennis.
Isha.
Thank you for this opportunity to address the Sangha. This night, I'd like to take a few minutes to share some impressions about something that we chant each time when we sit together. Dharma gates are boundless. I vow to enter them. So I'd like to take a few minutes to share some impressions, and after that, I'd be most grateful for your impressions as well. Recently, I came to the realization that my Zen practice has benefited from an unlikely gift. This unlikely gift is the fact that throughout my life, I've spent extended periods of time in a state of depression. And this has been a gift because it has shown me firsthand and again that the things that I often look to for contentment and meaning in life are actually unreliable sources of contentment and meaning. For example, accomplishments. I've seen firsthand and again that the contentment and meaning that accompany accomplishments are so strikingly short-lived that I often wonder why it was that I did whatever I set out to do in the first place. Or similarly, praise. I've been blessed to see firsthand and repeatedly that the contentment and meaning that accompany praise are so strikingly short-lived that I often wonder why I put so much value in the judgments of others to begin with. And interestingly, this has carried over to my Buddhist practice as well. There have been times when I've had a great deal of fervor for reading about Buddhism and talking about Buddhism. And recently, this fervor has somewhat dissipated. And interestingly, in the absence of this fervor, I've come to appreciate this practice of Zazen in a different way. I've come to a deeper appreciation of this beautiful practice of simply sitting in intimate contact with just this. And throughout life, in this absence of contentment and meaning, I've come to look to this basic fact of existence as a source of contentment and meaning. I'd like to read a poem by Wumen, or Mumon in Japanese, the compiler of the koan collection Mumonkan. Hundreds of flowers in spring, the moon in autumn, a cool breeze in summer and snow in winter. If there is no vain cloud in your mind, for you it is a good season. I'll read it once more. Hundreds of flowers in spring, the moon in autumn, a cool breeze in summer and snow in winter. If there is no vain cloud in your mind, for you it is a good season. In the absence of contentment of meaning, I've come to more deeply appreciate the deep contentment, the richness, the meaning, and this basic fact of existence and its myriad forms. The contentment and meaning of the leaves as they emerge now in the spring from the branches, with the contentment and meaning in Lake Michigan and its exquisite blueness, the meaning in sharing breakfast with my wife, or the contentment in sipping tea with Sangha friends. This basic fact of existence. As the vain cloud of looking to accomplishments, praise, for contentment and meaning has dissipated through firsthand and repeated experience of disappointment, I've been blessed to contact the richness of meaning in this basic fact of existence. And so we could say that one way of understanding Dharma gates are boundless is this, that this basic fact of existence in its myriad forms offers a much richer and deeper meaning and contentment than our ideas of meaning and contentment. However, I think to leave it at this would be incomplete. If I were simply to say that I go out into the world and access meaning and contentment in existence in its many forms, I think this would be incomplete. Even if it's deep meaning and contentment, even if it's Buddhist meaning and contentment, I think it's still incomplete. As we know, that the self goes forth and illuminates myriad things is delusion. That myriad things come forth to illuminate the self is awakening. In my experience, when we're fully engaged with this basic fact of existence, we're in total contact with this basic fact of existence, then we're able to see firsthand and again that the separation between that which experiences and that which is experienced drops away. There's just this experience of leaves coming from the branches in the spring. There's just this experience of the exquisite blueness of Lake Michigan, or just the experience of the dearness of dear ones. And in these moments, when there's just this experience, it becomes clear firsthand and repeatedly that I am not simply that which observes reality as it unfolds. I'm not simply a participant in reality, something outside of reality looking at. I'm also the context in which reality unfolds. In this intimate contact with this basic fact of existence, it becomes clear that I am the context in which reality comes to be. As reality unfolds in these leaves, these tender leaves and the branches now in spring, or Lake Michigan in its blueness, I am that original self, or formless self, or true person, or mind that allows the leaves to be tender, the lake to be blue, and dear ones to be dear. That through me, with me, as me, reality unfolds. And so, Dharma gates are boundless. I vow to enter them, and I am just that which is boundless. Not I, just as Sudesh Mukherjee, resident of Chicago, but I as an I and all beings awakened together. The fundamental quality of I-ness that speaks from over here and listens from over there where you are, this fundamental quality of I-ness. Dharma gates are boundless. I vow to enter them, and I am just that which is boundless. You are just that which is boundless. So these are some impressions that I have. Thank you for listening, and at this time I'd be most grateful for us all to share our own reflections. And unless you have a specific question for me, I will try my best to refrain from speaking so that we can have a collective conversation. So thank you.
Thank you for a really wonderful talk. So, now that I'm old enough to have been in American capitalism for a decent amount of time, I found that most of the things that I've been taught that would be what gives meaning to my life just actually don't give me that. And I spent years thinking that if I, yelled in the streets for long enough that would replace, that would give the meaning that I was searching for. But as I get older, I also realize that there's so many big problems that I can't fix. That it doesn't mean anything to protest, or it doesn't mean anything to respond helpfully, because it does mean something to do that. I'm gonna die, and there's gonna be big problems that are gonna be left after I'm gone. I can't, it's way, way bigger than what I have any control over. But I also don't think that means that I can't be happy, or that there isn't, contentment to have. And that's a big, lately, all I really want to do is, sit zazen and skateboard and listen to reggae. It's kind of the conclusion I've come to so far, that if something passes me in my day that I can be helpful with, then I do it, On Friday at work, I was responsible for a really big event with hundreds of people, and it went well, but it was exhausting. So I had the past 2 or 3 days of rest where I intentionally didn't give myself anything to do, any real major responsibilities. And I'm getting kind of dissatisfied with that, because I'm wondering now, and this is, I guess, an open question, how do you rest selflessly, Because I can read even books about Dharma or whatever, I can listen to music, I can watch a movie, I can even watch a movie that could be helpful for me, but after a while, then it's sort of like, okay, that's enough. But at the same time, I don't want to just be like working just for the sake of, working, or, just to like think that's where that contentment or meaning is going to come from. So, and I feel like this is a question that, is central to practice. How do you rest selflessly? That was just what started coming up in zazen today while we were sitting, so that's a question.
introduction to this discussion about non-dualism, I guess. And, you know, it reminded me that one of the, that quote by Ouimet, another translation I've heard of it is something like, when your mind is not clouded by unnecessary things, every day is a good day. And I had an old Japanese, my very first, actually, teacher at Zazen, was an Soto Zen teacher, but he was a Japanese, old Japanese teacher. And when he became senile and would give Dharma talks, he would just go, every day is a good day. That was all he had left. And I thought, I want to be like that someday. You know, that's that practice, that something's going on that feels right to me here. And that there's a sense of, you know, being clouded by grasping, wanting things to be different, wanting something, not wanting something, being spaced out about life. You know, those are the major modes, right? But I really, you know, appreciate more and more with practice how that's possible. And happy that you've encouraged us to see that in every single moment of our life, which is just uncomplicated. So thanks for the encouragement. Same to you, Philip. Especially with reggae. You know reggae, right?
I mean,
as a result of that, always saw myself as something of a failure, in that I hadn't arrived at whatever thing, I guess, or being I thought I was supposed to be or make myself into, sort of a transmutation. And that it caused me no end of sorrow and depression of just, you know, I'm nothing if I, you know, what am I going to be, what will I do, what sort of thing will I accomplish? And I think that the thing that really spoke to me when I first discovered Buddhism was, I guess, a question I've been asking myself a lot recently is just, who is it that that isn't these things, I guess, you know, it was sort of liberating that there was nothing to be or become other than, you know, what this already is, you know, whatever it is. There's just this, again, I love the idea of the sort of like the clouds lifting and parting, and all of a sudden, you know, you can experience just this freedom that comes with just experiencing without the need to be elsewhere or to be something else. These sort of distinctions kind of fade, I think, in those times. So yeah, lately I've been asking myself a lot, you know, when I want something or I'm doing something, especially something that I don't like about myself or whatever, it's sort of like, who is it that's having these thoughts? Who is it that is anxious? Or who is it that, you know, must become this thing or that thing? And just becoming aware in that moment of, well, sort of peering through the gates, you know, because they're everywhere around you.
And so that third sentence, you know, Dharma gates are boundless, I vow to enter them, he finds sort of a correlate in the third noble truth, which is the path to the cessation of suffering. And so I think about, so reading that really, you know, kind of was helpful for me in thinking about what are Dharma gates. They are, you know, maybe we can think of them as a thing in our lives that we have to encounter and kind of work with in such a way so that it helps us find that path through some suffering. And, you know, sometimes I think that comes from just when we stop, you know, fighting something. It feels so good for a moment. And maybe things in our lives that we find to be Dharma gates, like one of mine was, you know, incessant back pain while sitting, you know, and finally sort of working with that for a long time leads to you know, there's something that lets go and gives a little bit, and maybe that's something that we all can find in, you know, the things that we are trying to push away from in our lives and trying to get rid of, maybe if we kind of just can let them be and let ourselves be with them for a little while, we can find, you know, a little entry point through that to where we can not suffer with them so much.
Talk,
sir. Sure, Ed. I think I see you back there.
No, this is the Buddha speaking.
Oh, okay. Well, let's make sure the recorder is on, then.
I just want to praise you for your glorious speech. But, you know, one of my favorite painters is Gary James Marshall, the Chicago guy. And that's a very large canvas. There's a show in the bedroom. Contemporary art a few years back. I'm sure some of you saw it. This one painting in particular is of Sox Park. And it's sort of a caricature of Sox Park. It's very glimmery, shiny, crystalline. And also in this very giant painting, there's a couple liquor stores on South State Street that I happen to know are actual liquor stores on South State Street because I've been in them. They're very mundane, ugly, low buildings. And the contrast between the liquor store and the shimmery glory of Comiskey is really startling. And I suspect that the artist is attaining some notion of the obtained versus the unobtainable in that painting. Because that's a consistent theme in other paintings of his that I've observed, I think. And so this notion of separation and abandonment in life, I think, is fairly shared. And it's in that sharing that we find home, I think, at least for myself.
What time do we adjourn?
Anytime you want to, or anytime our conversation kind of
sure
feels like it's completed, but I mean, no later than 15 minutes from now.
A variety of very rich comments. Thank you all. Yeah, I think we can add, if anyone has anything to add to the conversation as well.
One of the novels that I read, when I got to the end of it, I just wanted to go back to the first page and read it again. And that's exactly the way I felt when you stopped talking. I just wanted to say, just do it again. And because the talk was really, was more than interesting. I don't know how to describe the effect it had on me. But I was a teacher of science in junior high, and I felt I had so much to offer these kids because I knew all the science that they didn't know, and I was going to tell them about it. And so from that you can surmise that I was not a very successful teacher. And teaching was for me something that I was giving, and I wanted people to appreciate it. Instead of looking at it as a rich experience for myself that would have enriched my life. So I was trying to enrich other people's lives, and I also wanted to get credit for that. So most people who have been around here very long know that I really like the precious mirrors of life. And so the part that keeps going through my mind is that because of this talk is, but whether teachings and approaches are mastered or not, reality constantly flows. And I think this is something that dogs your footsteps, so to speak. And anyway, I just wanted to thank you and Dylan and everybody. I really think this has been
maybe we should have some tea and cookies. What do we think? Thank you, everyone.